The AutJet Business Show is your gateway to expert business advice and real-world success stories. Each week, a different leader in the business world will share their tips, insights, and lessons, offering you practical advice to navigate your entrepreneurial journey. Whether you have a business idea or are just starting out or looking to elevate your existing business, the AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Ensure you get these transformative conversations live on Thursdays at 6 p.m. or find the podcast at highfm.com. Let's build your business empire together.
Welcome, welcome. It's that time of the week again. It's Thursday evening, just gone 6:05, and you're listening to the AutJet Business Show. I'm David Zeidel, and with us tonight we got Norman Rod, the CEO of Brol Auctions and Sales. Good evening, Norman.
Good evening, David. Thank you for having me here.
Great. And I'm going to introduce Norman, and then I'm going to go into a little bit of a business story, and then we'll go into the actual interview. But just picture this. Picture a young entrepreneur in his early 20s, and he opens a small coffee shop in Johannesburg. That little coffee shop soon turns into a pizzeria. That pizzeria turns into 7 busy restaurants. Customers are coming back, sometimes 2-3 times a week, because of a simple philosophy: the best possible product they can get at the best possible price. But along the way, there are also big decisions. Some of them are brilliant. Some, in hindsight, were mistakes, like turning down potentially a partnership opportunity with a major restaurant group. Learning the hard way about the power of leverage, which is borrowing. Discovering that sometimes the landlord is actually making more money than the business that is running inside that center. So Norman has gone from restaurants to retail to property, and eventually into one of South Africa's most fascinating industries, the property auction business. So Norman has built businesses. He's walked away from businesses, and he's learned that relationships often matter more than the balance sheets. So Norman has been an entrepreneur, a property specialist, and as I said, in the auctioneering industry. Norman, I'm going to ask you for your insight into that. But before we get there, I always start off with a little bit of a business story. And tonight's business story is that your real business might be the add-on, not the core product. And the example is a businessman visited a gym in America. And it was a large gym. But as he walked through, there were only 5 people inside, and rows of empty treadmills. The owner told this businessman that he was concerned for the survival of his business. He said, "I have 30 members paying $50 a month, and after expenses, there's not much left. If a few of them leave, I'm then going to be finished." And the businessman responded and said very bluntly to him, "Well, make the membership free." And the owner looked astounded and said, "What do you mean free? How am I going to make money if it's free?" And the businessman explained, "With free membership, the gym won't have 30 members. Maybe it'll have 500 members. And at least 150 of those would pay maybe $100 each a month for personal training. Others would buy the shakes, the supplements, and maybe even pay for premium classes and upgrades. The extras could add up to much more than what you're getting on the $1,500. And so the gym owner tried that, and he offered a free membership. All of a sudden, the trainers were fully booked. Classes overflowed. You couldn't get a seat where you were trying to get a smoothie from the bar. And by the end, his revenues hit just over $42,000. So what's the lesson? The lesson is Stop selling access and start selling the ecosystem. Your core product is really your biggest revenue opportunity. Design an ecosystem where the entry point is irresistible and profit from the value that you provide around that. And the same applies if you look at it at hotel rooms. Sometimes you'll go into a hotel room, and if you're in America, it would be like $9 a coffee when you order, or $40 a breakfast, and then you might go for a spa treatment for $120. And the room isn't the business. All those extras that add up are. And that's our business story for today. And I'm going to ask Norman the intro question, but we'll do it after the break.
The AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Welcome. You're listening to 101.9 High FM. This is the AutJet Business Show, and I'm David Zeidel. And we're about to start our interview with Norman Rod, the CEO of Broll Auctions and Sales. So, Norman, where did you go to school, and what would you consider as your first entrepreneurial activity? Was it something that you did while you were still at school, or did you become entrepreneurial after that?
Yeah, so David, I mean, I'll take you back to where I started off. I mean, my folks, my dad was a teacher at a school, and my mom worked at Woolworths. And we didn't have much, and like a lot of people when they started off, and a lot of people those days, there wasn't a lot of, like today, there's a lot more wealthy people, a lot more successful people, and the economies have grown, and people have really, families have done well, and generations have done well over the years. But when I grew up, I mean, there was literally nothing. I mean, I remember as a young boy not being able to go on a school camp. But I was ambitious, and I was a big competitor. I loved sport, and I was always trying to succeed and do well. And I hated not having anything. I mean, I went to primary school. There was a lot of times that my folks would do whatever they could to give me what they could, but it wasn't what I would liked, and I wanted more. So I used to start packing bags at Woolies from a very young age of 14 years old. I think that's when my first job was, and I would pack bags, and I think I remember getting 2 rand an hour, and that's what I did, my first job. That's where I started with one of my mom's shops at the Woolies, and packing bags at the till.
So when you're in that situation and you feel like we need more money, sometimes it feels like it's a hardship. I mean, starting at 14. But do you think that those years gave you that ability to say, hang on, I can make a difference? Did it teach you something?
When you have very little and you would like to enjoy some of the good things in life, you actually need to go out there and make it happen. And, you know, the little that I made at the time, it made a massive and a huge difference to me. I mean, it wasn't a lot, but it most certainly was a significant amount for me to do things that I couldn't do unless I went and I worked on a Friday afternoon or a Saturday morning. And you know, those days, there weren't even shops open on a Sunday, but I got to enjoy and spend it on a Sunday, either playing golf or doing something that my parents couldn't allow me to do, but they couldn't afford it. So, you know, it makes you, and I think today, a lot of the kids today, and I think that we very kind and generous, including myself, and we spoil them a little bit. And, you know, that hunger is sometimes lost. And, you know, I think when it's there, you know, there's more urgency and more determination to be successful or to just to achieve something that you can give you a bit of freedom to do certain things that you choose.
So you at a very young age, at the age of 14, you learned to earn some money, and then how did that progress into you starting to do your own entrepreneurial stuff? What was the first thing that you did?
Well, so, I mean, obviously it wasn't enough working at Woolworths. So I decided to go and become a waiter. And I say that with absolute pride because I think I've learned more being a waiter from the young age of about 16 in restaurants. And I would recommend that to any young person or any family for their kids to go and start off there because it teaches you so much. It taught me so much, it taught me how to communicate, it taught me how to deliver, it taught me how to serve, it taught me how to make people happy, to make sure that they got looked after. It taught me the value of money. It taught me the more and the nicer I was to people, the more they would tip me and the kinder they would be to me. And as a waiter, that gives you so many lessons that you actually, if you miss that gap from a young age, you actually don't realize it unless you've done it, what you've actually earned and enjoyed and been part of. And so, becoming a waiter, then obviously there was that time there was the army, the service. We went to do service, but I didn't spend much time there because I was playing a bit of sport, and most of my free time I got to carry on working in the restaurant business. And towards the end of the military service, my brothers and I, we all got together and we decided that we would like to open a coffee shop. A coffee shop, maybe a pizzeria. And we took the idea. We used to go to another restaurant in the south and in Brixton was called Gino's. And people would remember if they're anywhere around my age, and Chiros. And they were an unbelievable little institutions where they actually offered an unbelievable environment, product, and very cheap. It was in the south, I was from Randburg. And we would travel all the way there because, I mean, you could get a whole family could eat and experience something at a very affordable value, and the environment was brilliant, and everything was just perfect. And we said, let's bring this to the northern suburbs, is which we did. So my brothers, we opened a restaurant called a coffee shop, which we decided later to turn it into a pizzeria called Fratelli, which means brothers in Italian. My brother-in-law was Italian, and his brother was involved. And at the time, there were actually five of us. There was a guy that was also involved with us. His name was Anthony Rose, Tony Rose. And he went on to also open more restaurants called the Tony Spaghetti Factory, what people may know today. He was very involved in the pioneer and the startup of the fishmonger with Nick and Dimitri. So we started with and I'm not lying to you. I think it was about a 20-seater. It was a small 80 square meter shop in Craighall Park, Blegowrie, at the bottom of Conrad Drive. And very soon thereafter, we became a household name in the northern suburbs. And we were queuing almost every single night. One, because we offered a great product for a very, very cheap, great value. The ambience was brilliant. And people came there and they had the most amazing time, and they would come back again.
So if you look back when you started it, did you go through and create what we now call in business as a business plan? Or did you just get together as brothers and say, hey, let's open up a restaurant, and you just went for it?
So we had an idea of what we liked. I mean, we saw there was a bit of copy and paste from those successful shops in the south. And it was a bit of like trial and error of what to serve. I mean, I remember, I mean, it really was, we literally started from absolutely zero. I mean, I used to have a bucky, and I used to go to Makro and fill the bucky up with our whatever we were going to use that week in the shop. I mean, it wasn't a big shop, so it wasn't in a lot. So we'd go and fill it up there in the south, in Crown Mines, and that's where the macro was, and we would come back. And so that we just knew that if we offered a good product and we had a nice menu. I mean, at that stage, there was everyone will know the Aaron brothers from Turn and Tender. I mean, they were one of our first customers, and they were actually even involved in helping us add things to our menu and help us at that stage because they lived down the road and they loved our little vibe, and they thought, this is quite cute, and we became friends. So it wasn't like a big plan. We were like a bit of trial and error, but we kind of eventually found the rhythm that worked,
So I want to get into a little bit more around how you priced the products, how you made it work. Did you know that it was working? and then we'll go, where did you progress from there? But we'll do that after the break.
The AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
You're listening to 101.9 High FM. I'm David Zeidel, and this is the AutJet Business Show. And we're busy talking to Norman Rod, who's the CEO of Broll Auctions and Sales. But Norman's taking us through his background to start off with, where he started working, originally packing stuff at the age of 14 at Woolies, and then at about age of 16 started working in the restaurant business. And he said that taught him so many skills. It taught him how to communicate, how to deliver, how to serve, how to make people happy and get an understanding of value of money. And getting a return from people for being kind. And all of these skills put together then allowed him to go and start his own business, which he called Fratelli, which means, did you say in Italian, it means brothers? Because he did it with his brothers. And their basis was, let's create a great product at great value. And then Norman, just before the break, I asked you, when you started doing this, it's one thing to have the product, but two questions for you. How did you price what you were going to sell things for? And if you can remember back to those early days, did you just open the doors and wish and pray people came in, or how did you get customers?
Yeah, so there was no digital marketing at that stage. I mean, I can tell you that it would have been very different as it is today. But when we started, I mean, again, we had a small menu. There were not a lot of seats. There was a lot of, we did a lot of takeaways. But what we wanted to do at the time, there was a place called Pizza Hut that was around, and there was a place called People's Pizza. And they didn't offer authentic Italian wood burning oven pizzas. And that's what we had. And we just wanted to make sure that we were cheaper than them. And we went one step further. We decided that if we allowed the kids to eat for free, that the parents would come. And that was one of our tricks. We realized that we had like a family vibe, a family restaurant. It wasn't a lot of seats. People used to sit on the lawn outside and wait for their table to come or wait for their takeaways. But we wanted to create something that people, when they left there, they thought it was like they were getting real value. We created, so we got crayons and pictures for the kids to coloring, but we wanted them to eat for free. They could make their own little pizzas and they could eat for free. And I see that some of the places are doing that today, but they're not letting them eat for free, but they're certainly charging them. But that in its own little way, we were the only place doing it. And when I say to you, we were busy, and between my brothers and myself and working there, we were almost every single night queuing because of the value of what we had created for people. I mean, it was cheaper to come and eat at us than sometimes to cook at home.
And how did you price it when you were looking to price your product? That, yes, it would be cheap for somebody, but you could still make money from it.
So we kind of knew more or less. We tried to work on a GP. We were going to get maybe 60 or 70% gross profit margin on what we were trying to get through at that time. But you know, if I tell you in the beginning, it wasn't about money. We obviously didn't want to lose money, but we just wanted to make a profit. If we made a profit in the beginning, we were very happy. And we just didn't want to lose money. We had borrowed money from, we couldn't get money from anyone except someone that lent you money. We borrowed from money from a gentleman that's still around today, lending money to people to start businesses. And we had lent money, and we put a little bit of money of ourselves, but it didn't cost a lot. Literally, we started the restaurant with 50,000 Rand, and everyone put in 5,000 Rand, and we borrowed another 5,000 each from the loan, the person that loaned money, you know. So our product was working because I think we were achieving about a 65% GP, so we knew, but we were still happy with that, you know. Mm. I mean, sometimes a little bit less, but we didn't mind. Our rent was very low. It was cheap. I mean, it was a couple of grand. And we could afford to be the cheapest in the area.
So for people who are listening in and they're not sure what Norman's talking about with a GP percentage of 65%, really what that just means is if you take your sales less the cost of sales, which is actually the cost of the product that you're making, you're left with 65% of your sales. And in the food business, 65% is what one should aim at, because then you still got to pay for your other expenses. Norman, from there, how did you expand and where did you go to next after running that restaurant, and how long did you run it for?
Yeah, so I got a bit lucky. Well, you got a bit lucky. I mean, we had a client that used to come there almost religiously once a week. His name was Peter Berman. He owned Hyde Park Shopping Center. And he said, I want you to come and open in Hyde Park. And I thought that was a great idea. And at the time, I decided, okay, if we're going to do this, we're going to do it properly. And I took a trip on a plane and I went to Italy. And I went in and looked at all the Italian restaurants there, and I got some ideas, and I came back and I took photos and I sent them to a designer, and I said, I want you to design this little pizzeria in Hyde Park. Yeah, they were going to do it. He gave us the most unbelievable rental I could ever. I mean, if I told you that, I think the first rental that I paid there was 6,000 Rand net rental per month in 1995. It was a massive thing for us, because we designed the most beautiful restaurant, and it had the Sistine Chapel, on the roof. It was decorated, and at the same time we opened at the Ramberg waterfront. If you remember the Ramberg waterfront, that it was an amazing development in its early years. I mean, everyone was trying to get in there, and we built a massive shop there, a massive store. I think it was seated about 350 people. And we'd already, by that stage, from starting in 1990, had built a name for ourselves in the northern suburbs. And when we opened in the Ramberg waterfront and in Hyde Park, we were literally full every single evening, and sometimes in Hyde Park almost every single day. Again, offering the same product, kids eat for free, value, good product. And, we had a very good following, and we were all in this, we all played sport, my brothers and ourselves. So we had a lot of following from our sporting days, our football days, and our school, and people used to come and support us. But the one thing that happened in Fratelli, the first store, let me just tell you, is that I was at Wits. I went to Wits, and through the Wits, my Wits degree, I had this pizzeria. So I would go do my vids during the day, and then in the evening I'd come and work in the pizzeria. But a lot of my friends at vids came to waiter at Fratelli. I mean, there's one of the most famous people in property in America at the moment. His name's Grant Hurlitz. He's actually, I think, one of the top property people in the States at the moment. And he waited all through his degree for 4 years. They've all learned something waitering there, and that community of mine at Wits and all my friends that I built and I created there. Robin Maggot, he worked there. I mean, people would know who Robin is. He was I think his first job out of Wits. He came to work there. He helped me get me into property. One of my best friends. And we had we obviously all worked there. They waited, and some of them managed. But we had this most amazing time, and we used to go out in the evenings. We were still all very young. I was very, very young. And that following, and that people used to come, they used to enjoy it. Families used to come in, and there was like a family environment in all the stores. But as much as it was good, it actually would end up being detrimental to me and our business and the brothers, because we became the people in the store, and when we weren't there, people complained because they wanted us to see us there.
Mm. And just very briefly, what did you study when you were at Wits?
So I did a BCom, kind of majored in law, and didn't finish the LLB part. But I mean, I enjoyed it. I played football there, and I was very competitive, but a lot of my friends that I was with at Wits, they're still friends, and we still speak and see each other, and we're still in business. Mm. Some of us, we still do a lot of business together.
And then where did you progress after that?
So, interestingly, at the time we opened the Randburg Waterfront, one of the biggest mistakes that I made, and I remember, was we were approached by the Spur Group. Alan Amble and Pierre van Tonder came to see me. I knew Alan from the community and from the restaurants, and they said they want to come see us. And they came to see me and they said, listen, we are venturing into possibly opening up an Italian chain. And they made us an offer to take the brand and grow the brand, and they made us an offer to buy the restaurants, and we would keep one or two of them ourselves, and I would go and work for the group. That decision I deeply regret because I didn't understand. I thought, you know, we're making money, we're putting all our money into the business, we're paying for everything, we had no debt, we didn't owe anyone. But I was too young to realize and to understand what the power of a financial backer and like a corporate like that behind you, what they could do for you. At the time, Nando's was growing. We thought, you know, we could follow and copy the Nando's model and we'd open all these Italian restaurants all over the place. But they, in their own right, had their own backing, financial backing, and their business was doing really, really well. And, you know, when we declined the offer, they eventually went on, obviously, as everyone knows, they opened up their name that came out with Panarottis. We obviously didn't do the deal, and the rents caught up with us in all our stores. We started feeling the pressure of renegotiating and losing margin, mainly because of the landlords knew that we were busy and they had massive leverage over us. And if we didn't agree to the rentals, you know, they would replace us with someone else in the same business who was prepared to take the chance. And that decision, I think today, is one of the biggest mistakes that I had made because I was a bit young, naive, and could I say, thought I knew that we could do it on our own. And listen, it was a mistake and I learned from it, but you know, it's one of those decisions you live with and you move on.
So that mistake is almost like a double mistake in terms of you didn't get the backing, but also then they introduced a player who would compete directly against you being in the Italian business or Italian
food
business.
Sure, they opened very close to us. They offered a little bit of a different product, but they opened very close to us in Randburg Waterfront, diluted our market, and people would like to go try the new Italian business. And you know, I was in the shop. We were all in the shop for many hours and many days and a great length of time. And I was starting to get maybe a little bit bored being there for like close on now, 1998. It was close on nearly 8 years of being working there really hard. And I looked around and I was talking to my brothers and I said, you know what, we've got to do something else. We're good at retail. We're good at this. But I can't work these hours in those restaurants anymore, and I don't think any one of them could and wanted to. And we were just a bit stuck. And then I had friends that I'd met through the restaurant business, Jonathan Reichman and Stuart Hendler. They live in Cape Town. They had a small business called Pen and Art, and they wanted to start to get the Swatch franchise, which we eventually got, and we ventured into opening retail stores, all the Swatch stores and all the Pen and Art stores. I think eventually as a group at one stage, we had about 17 of those, and I was responsible for helping them set them up and building them and just investing in that business. And we took a little bit of a, you know, not only did we have the stores in Cavendish and in Hyde Park, which were very successful and doing well, Randburg Waterfront at that time was still busy, Craigle Park, we were doing okay, but I wanted something more. I wanted more challenges. I wanted new things. And I said, this is where I'm going to go. Okay, retail wasn't what it is today. And it didn't last as long as I thought it would last. But it was very good. I loved the work. I loved the environment. But after 3 or 4 years, I think 3 years, I decided that, you know, we decided that we're going to sell that business.
So what I want to do is I want to get into where did you go after that business when you started and how did you get into the property business and then from the property business to the auctioneering business. But we'll do that after the break.
The AutJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
You're listening to 101.9 High FM. I'm David Zeidel, and this is the AutJet Business Show. And we're busy talking to Norman Rod, the CEO of Brawl Auctioneers. And we're just going through his background initially, starting off working in Woolies, then working as a waiter, then opening up his own restaurant and all the lessons he learned from that, and then having the opportunity to sell the business, and he didn't. And then slowly, slowly, things started catching up with them. And then he moved on into another business and getting the Swatch brand, and then got into kind of the property business and eventually the auctioneering business. So we're at that stage where you got into property for the first time. Can you tell us, how did you go from what you were doing to then changing completely again?
So I was dealing with in property at the time, negotiating all the leases for either the restaurants or with Swatch or with Pen and Art, with Johnny and I. And I just had enough when we'd sold, and I'd got out of the Pen and Art and the Swatch business, and I was kind of exiting the restaurants, full working in them. I phoned my friend up, who today I'm still very close to, Robin Maggot, who at the time was running Investec. He was part of the property division there. And I said, Robin, I want to get into property. Can you help me? He said, listen, you are too entrepreneurial for a corporate. I'll introduce you to someone, and then you can take it from there. And he introduced me to a wonderful guy named Mark McCready, who had the biggest brokerage in the country at the time. They actually were listed. I think they were listed under IOTA. And Mark McCready, when I went into an interview to meet him, he said, he actually ended up, I knew him from the restaurant. And when I walked in, he said to me, you're hired. So I said, well, I don't know what to do. I just want to learn. So he said, well, we don't pay anyone salaries yet, but you can be a broker and you can learn. I said, well, I don't want anything. I don't want a salary. I just want to learn. And if you can teach me, it'd be great. And if it all works out, I'll be here for a long time. And that's how it started. So I was very grateful to Robin at the time for setting me up. And I was extremely grateful to Mark and Alan Kodachi, who worked with Mark. It was a wonderful experience. And for the first 6 months, they put me in a room and I did valuations. And I never left the room. And after 6 months, they taught me how to do valuations. I wasn't a silly guy. I mean, I had a degree and I kind of understood property already. And after 6 months, I said, I'm done with valuations. I want to do something else. I said, either you're going to give me something else to do or I'm leaving. And they said, no, you're ready now. So then they said, okay, now you're going to go meet clients and see if you can do some deals, some leasing or brokerage, but mainly sales. They put me in the sales part. And that's how I started. I mean, I'm used to cold call, phone people who own properties, phone listed funds, and said, I want to come and see you, what properties you have to sell. And it's very different to what it is today. I think there were only a dozen properties listed on the stock exchange. They introduced me to everyone. They played a significant role in my life, getting into property. But then I took a trip to Cape Town. And this was really, I didn't make a lot of money there, but it was 2 years of proper learning with them. I hardly did any deals, to be honest with you. Like most brokers in the beginning, it's very difficult. Then I went to Cape Town and I saw this most wonderful brand, marketing brand, and looked around and they were everywhere. And it was a company called Auction Alliance. And I said I just had to know who they were and find out more about them. And I don't see them. They weren't in Johannesburg. And I wanted to see if I could open that, what they had in Johannesburg, because I actually went to one of their auctions and it was such an unbelievable experience. And I said, this is what I want to do. I'd made up my mind and I said, I need to reach out and get to them. And my brother, we had opened another restaurant in Cape Town, which today is an institution, is one of the most famous restaurants, called Caprice. In Camps Bay, he happened to know one of the directors, And he set the meeting up. And from that meeting, I met Rael Levitt, who I think had the most significant part to play and role to play in my career in business and entrepreneurship. He taught me a lot of things, and I'm pretty, very grateful for that. And I said, I want to open in Gauteng. He said, they're already there. He said, they're there already, but they weren't doing that well. And he's not sure if he can even bring me on board because they weren't sure where they were going to go. They really weren't doing that well. And it may be the timing of the market. Things were starting to happen in the property industry. It was just after the interest rate crash, I mean, hike, and then the market crash in 2003, 2004, that era. Things are starting to look a little bit more positive. And he gave me a chance. And I started in the early year, I think in 2003 or well, I think it was three or four. And soon thereafter, we did our first deal, I think within a month. And then we did multiple deals, and it just exponentially grew exponentially. And Rael and I became very close, and we built a business. And the secret to the business that we built was that we were going to improve the experience of the auction industry in the commercial sector. There were other people doing it. There was Orcor, the Wintersteins, they were doing it. But I came from the restaurant background, and I knew how to make and how people enjoy an experience. It was like an event for me. And between myself and Rael, we put on an unbelievable show. There was a lot of people else in the team with us. I mean, he had a big business already, and it was growing, and they had a great marketing team. And he wasn't scared to spend, and he wasn't scared to spend money on marketing. And that's what he taught me most out of everything. He says, you can never spend too much on marketing. You can never ha give someone an experience. You've got to always improve the experience, and that's what we try to do. And you must always make sure that the people are, which I learned from the restaurant business, is that they think that they're getting actually more than they're actually paying for. And that's what I think we did. We built relationships. We became the authority in property valuations and in the auction property values and in the auction industry. And within a couple of years, I mean, we really had no competition, and we were the dominant players in the business.
Did you do the auctioneering yourself?
No. Rael did those auctions then.
Oh,
There were a
okay.
couple of auctioneers. There was Rael and a couple of others. The one of the other auctioneers was a guy named Ishi, still works with me today, Ishi Hendricks. But Rael did the auctions those days, the big ones, the big multiple auctions.
It's
He did a good job.
good that you didn't, because I was going to ask you to give us the auctioneering voice, but can't do that now. Okay, so what you were saying is that the skills that you learned from the restaurant business, although it looks completely different, that was the quality that you brought with, and that was, you can transfer the skills, and it was about giving an experience and getting people to feel like they're getting more than what they're paying for, which was related to you feeding the kids for free. And then how did you go from there? And I believe you're still in the auctioneering business, but now you're CEO of Broll Auctioneers.
Yeah, so I mean, at no time during when I was there with Auction Alliance, that I was I not enjoying it or having a good time. It really was an unbelievable company. We did very well, and the people around me were exceptional. I mean, I made some tremendous contacts, but we're taking this to the next level. I mean, we built relationships that were like deep relationships with in the property industry, listed funds. Now there were a lot more listed funds listed on the stock exchange, and I basically had a relationship with almost every single CEO of every listed fund. I was in contact with them all the time, and if they wanted to sell anything, they would speak. They would speak to me, and they would communicate with me, and we'd do that. And then eventually, it got a stage where I think Rael might have made a mistake. I think in hindsight, I think he did make a mistake for us. He wanted to restructure the business, and some of us left. And I think he lost a few good people. And then there was a whole issue with thereafter. But I had to leave. We decided we're going to part ways. And I had a restraint, which again, one of the lessons I learned in life. I didn't even realize when I signed, I had no intentions of leaving, and I signed a restraint. And now this restraint was in front of me, and I was dealing with it. And it wasn't like I'd wanted to leave. But we had reached an agreement and decided to leave, but I had to live by that restraint. So there was a period of 2 years that I couldn't actually be in the property industry. And it basically, the decision or the agreement that we reached that I had to be actually be out of the industry, which allowed them to grow and develop and basically without me, which was very difficult for me to swallow, especially that I built the business with them. And now I was sitting on the sidelines and I couldn't be in the business. So as a personal challenge for me in that time and difficulty, it was possibly the hardest, most difficult time of my life. Because everything I built for it is basically gone overnight. And at that time, I'm going to tell you something, which I mean, it's going to be difficult to understand. But at the very same time, I, with everything going on around me, I went through a divorce. So when I say to you I was in a bad space, I can't tell you how low I felt and down I was. And I looked around and I thought that from having almost everything and being happy and everything was going well, everything had been taken away from me. My family, my wife, my business, and some of it I had no control over. To be honest with you, I really didn't. I was receiving a lot of stuff that I wasn't enjoying what was happening to me. But I learned quite quickly from the people around me and the support structure that I had that I got to get back. I got to get healthy. I got to get fit. I got to get strong, and I got to go and either reinvent myself or. But I ain't gonna do it sitting at home. And that's what I did. And I went and I created my own new brand company, which was around for a short while, was called Green Day. And I had a few people came and left and came to join me, and we had about 12 people in the business, and we started again. And then something very interesting. We were having fun. We were doing well. And one of the CEOs of a listed fund said, "Listen, we'd love to work with you, but we can't. You're a small business now. You used to be a big corporate, like with a big brand. You need to go and find a big partner." And the penny dropped because I realized, as good as I was, and with all the relationship that I had, I was going backwards with a small brand, and I didn't want to do it all over again. So, I started meeting some of the big corporates that were interested in getting back into the auction business, and I met a number and I had a few offers from a few people to come and start with them and to join them. And I met the most wonderful person named Jonathan Broll, and we hit it off from the first meeting that we had. And he said he loves the business, he loves the industry, and he wants to do something with me. And I must tell you, and more exceptional human being, you wouldn't meet, you won't meet. And he said to me, "What do you want for your business?" And my exact words to him, I wasn't sure because I had a little bit of a business and I wasn't sure if I should charge him or not charge him or how we're going to do the deal. And I went to go see another good friend of mine, the late Sam Hackner. And I said, "This is the deal. This is what I'm faced with. Please, can you give me advice?" He said to me, "Don't charge him anything." He said, "Just go into a partnership with him and start again from free. It'll go a long way." And I think it did go a long way. I went back to Jonathan and I said, "Listen, let's just go into partnership together. You don't have to pay for anything. And you might not even have to put any money in. We'll start from day one and see how it goes." And he agreed. And we've had over 11 years of a successful partnership, and we've gotten very well. And he's a good friend of mine today. And I'm surrounded by good people. And I'm creating a succession plan that'll go beyond me. And like I did in the restaurant business, where I was stuck in there, the lessons that I learned from being there. And I'm now trying to learn from those mistakes to make sure that the youngsters that are coming through and the ambitious entrepreneurs that are coming through now can take actually the reins and continue with this business and make money and do well and grow it even better and further. And especially in this digital marketing space that we are, there's so many great things that they're coming up with and that they're doing. It's mind-blowing and really it's beyond what I would have even thought of, that they're coming up with some of these ideas.
So Norman, it sounds like that lesson that you said you wish you had learnt with when you had the opportunity to sell the restaurant business, You learned that lesson and used it later on when you did this deal. We're running out of time. We've only got a couple more minutes. And I just want to ask you towards the end, if there's one lesson or two lessons that you could tell anybody who's in business, whether they're starting up or been in business, what's the one lesson or the one thing that you'd want to emphasize that they should focus on?
Okay, so don't do too much. Learn until the age of 30. Do as much as you can until the age of 30. Learn, and decide what you love. Decide what makes you get up in the morning excited, and it's not about just making money, and money will flow. I promise you right now it will come. But I think some of the other lessons that I've learned along the way, follow your gut. Don't listen to everyone around you. Don't. Just follow your gut. Whatever decision I've ever made by following my gut and I've done has always been good. When I've ever invested in some other people without me being there, I've never done well. When I follow my gut and I believe and my heart is there, it's always been, and it will always be successful, because if you've got the gut and this is what you want to do, you'll make it happen. I can promise you that you need to keep some of the stuff. Don't share your ideas with a lot of people. Keep it yourself until it's done. I've had instances where there's been ideas that I've had and I've shared it and they've been copied and snapped over, and then hasn't been good. So keep it, follow your gut, do what you love. You can never stop marketing enough and spend enough money on marketing. And then one of the big things is control the money of your business. Whatever business you have, make sure you control the money of your business, because I've had instances where I was very loose and a previous MD was stealing and the financial accountant was being involved in all sorts of no, because we were loose. Now I've learned from that mistake. You have structures in place. Make sure that you are in control of the money of your business, because if it is loose, the opportunity and the vulnerability of your business, people will take advantage and they'll see it as a weakness, and then you will regret it in the long run. And just make sure everything's in writing. No matter what you do in life, make sure your documentation's in writing. No matter who it is, could be family, could be friends, could be your best friend. I know everyone has to work on trust and love and handshakes. Just put it in writing. Reduce everything to writing. Make sure it's in writing so that you've got something to fall back on, and read your contracts before you sign anything, because you don't want to be stuck with a 2-year restraint like I was.
Fantastic. So some of the stuff you've just said now is you got to learn to earn.
And last thing.
Go ahead.
Buy as much property as you can. I know it's hard to buy property because you need gearing. Find someone who trusts you, likes you, and will help you, lend you financially. But buy as much commercial property or property as you can, because I've done well with the business. It's given me a cash flow and we've done okay and I've enjoyed it, but I haven't created wealth. The only time we've really made money in the industry is when we've bought property, and over time it's grown exponentially, and we've used the bank's money to help us leverage by buying property. And I can't stress that enough. Brokering or sales or business gives you cash flow. Take that cash and invest it in assets that you actually know, believe in property, in good positions with good tenants. And I promise you will see those businesses in their own right grow exponentially over time.
And when you talk about leverage, it's about using other people's money to make some money. And then
bank's money.
Use the bank's money, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
well, if you think about it, if you put 20% down and the bank gives you 80%, who's taking the real risk? The bank is.
Yeah. There's an old quote from Donald Trump when he was in the property business, where he apparently owed millions or billions of dollars, and he said, if you owe the bank $100,000, it's your problem. If you owe them millions, it's their problem. What do you say?
100%.
So you're saying that you've got to learn the things, learn the skills that you need. One thing that you haven't said, but I think it's come through very clearly through everything that you've said, is that people and connections with people are crucial to the success of business. So I just want to thank you for all this amazing input and all this information that you've given us and a way of thinking and sharing your true story of how you started with nothing, but how you've grown it through and been through struggles. So, Norman, I just want to thank you for sharing that with us. If you've just tuned in at the end and you're not sure who we're talking to, this has been Norman Rod, the CEO of Brawl Auctions, but also he's shared his whole life or whole business life story with you and with me. And I just want to say thank you from 101.9 High FM and the Orchard Business Show. And I'm David Zeidel, and let's do business.